Succession number 23139, Reel 4.
Bob Soller's Reel 4.
So, there they were. The last of the boats had gone. There was one other MLC there, but nobody would take it because word went round that it had been, all the fuel had been taken and put on the other boat, so we didn't. Nobody bothered. If the engine wouldn't go, there was no point taking the boat. Flat bottom boat of these MLCs, you can't guide them without motors. So there we were, and we just waited for the Germans to come. And we were not on the water side when they came down, me personally I'm talking about. And then we saw coming down from the hill one solitary German soldier. And it was an Unteroffizier of the Gebirgsjäger, which was the mountain troops. And he just came along, not carrying a rifle or anything like that. All he had was the sidearms. And just walked down and walked amongst us. And in a friendly manner. I remember this so vividly that I can almost remember what he looked like. But that was the first encounter with the German army. Not long after that, a platoon came marching down, and they weren't quite so nice. They had to round us up and get some organization going so that they could form us up and get us marched back in towards Kania again, Hania. Of which, after a certain time, we had to go through a certain area where these troops were told to take anything away, which weapons of any kind, if we had any. But of course, the only weapons we had was our knives, and that was all confiscated. And they went through our haversacks if we were carrying a haversack. And of course, Jim was carrying his haversack, and inside Jim's haversack was this iron ration. You know what I'm talking about, the iron ration, which had solid chocolate in a tin. We were sharing mine. We had a little small portion of this chocolate now and again to keep us going. But when this German went through Jim's haversack, he realized what this was and confiscated it. And we were in no situation to argue with him. So we just followed the crowd where we were, and eventually we were told to pursue the way back to Hania, the way we'd come. And that was quite a slog, but a forced march, which we had to move. We didn't have to dilly-dally. And that was really hard going. No stops for water. We had no water. It was really hard going. Can't remember a great deal of the march back until we got to near Vresus, and we were so tired and so whacked out because we'd already marched that way, and there we had to march back. By the way the crow flies, it was 25 miles, but by foot it's 50 because of the high mountain tracks. So when we got getting lateish in the afternoon, and although there were columns of us POWs by now marching the roadside going back towards Suda Bay and Hania, and you wouldn't get a lot of German soldiers at this point, and of course we had no fighting us not at that time. So Jim and I, we decided that we weren't going to go any further, and at an appropriate time, and seeing an appropriate sight, we just slipped off the road into the trees, and we put our head down, we went to sleep straight away. And the next thing we heard was just the tramping of feet. Lines, more and more prisoners of war coming back. This was early in the morning. Fortunately, we were near a stream, and that was the first thing we did as soon as we saw it. We went straight to the stream, like many others did. We managed to get a drink. We managed to get a swish of water in our faces when the Germans quickly, with threats of shooting us, or to continue our march off. When we eventually got to Suda Bay, or Suda village, we then had to go towards Hanyang. And just as we were leaving Suda, cottages on the left-hand side of the road, we came across our first civilians. And there they were, going indoors and coming out with buckets of water. As soon as it was emptied, they go in and out again with buckets of water. More than what you'd expect them to do with the Germans now being in charge. But they did. The Cretans were wonderful people. And then we made then another, we didn't stay in Hanya. We had to make our way after that on the road which went out towards Malmy, and a short way out on the coast road we stopped at the 7th General tented camp, a tented hospital rather, not a camp, of where we were told to stop, and that's the only place the Germans told us to stop. And they said we'd have some food there, but unfortunately the food which was given out there was given out to the people that was there. We were a bit late. We got nothing. So we then, first thing we did, basically, we went into the sea and had a good old soaking of washing and getting the sweat and dirt off of us. Slept the night somehow on the sand or somewhere. Next morning we were formed up, and again we were told we were moving out into another camp. This time, I know now, it was the road from Hanya, or at least the 7th General, which was near Galatas, along the road by the prison valley, towards Omalas. That was the road we were taking. But along there, we came to I'll remember it in a minute. And then on to, after that village, we went then to the next village called Skynes. Skynes. And at Skynes we were put into a field, guarded, ringed, I might say, with German soldiers, machine guns, and we were in this area, and we didn't know what was going to happen from that point onwards. Seeing all these machine guns hang around, we didn't feel all that comfortable. We were in this small camp, and we were allowed out twice a day to cross the road where the mountain, fresh mountain stream of water, it was coming down through a man-made irrigation flow from the mountains straight the way through, of which farmers took their water from as it passed through. And we used to wash and get water to drink, and then had to go back into the field. And our life there was pretty hard, because we had no food, hardly any food at all. And Oh, well, yes, I did steal some food. It wasn't from any civilian, it was from the Germans. And I think perhaps it might have been food which was destined for the British Army anyway. One evening, I was by near the just coming back from the getting water from the irrigation stream, when a German non-commissioned officer, I should assume he was, beckoned to me to come with his finger and pointed me and beckoned me to come. I was a bit wary what he wanted, but I went. And went up into where the Germans had erected British bell tents. And it wasn't very far away that apparently what had, a certain German officer, being a doctor, had arrived, and he'd, all he wanted somebody to do was to carry his bags from A to B. It was getting dusk, and at the entrance of the field was like a guard tent. And around the outside of that guard tent was a lot of sacks and bits and pieces, boxes and things. And I had this in mind. After delivering the cases to where the doctor was going to be billeted in a tent, he just dismissed me, just like that. My mind was on the tent around by the gate where I had to go back in. And so, gingerly and quickly, I just mooched around the tent with nobody around. I found a piece of bread and I found some raisins. Now, all I had on was shorts and a shirt. I stuffed as many raisins as I could between my shirt and my body, and a piece of bread about that big, and stuffed that into my shirt in case any Germans had saw me, because I'd probably shoot me if they did see me.
About as big as a slice?
A quarter, so, you know, sort of bit more than just a slice. Anyway, went back to Jim. I said, "Yeah, Jim, have a feed." And we broke it in half. He had a half. He had half of the raisins, and I had a half. And of course, raisins was one of the worst things you could eat, especially on an empty stomach, because stomachs were so small, the stomach couldn't contain much food. The bread, of course, we had the bread. We thought to ourselves, have a little, not too much, and save some for tomorrow. And I know, I think it must have been Jim, had some raisins, and during the night he vomited it all up. I think it was too rich or what, I don't know why. Anyway, that kept us going for a little while longer. Now, I'm afraid I can't think of much more to say about that place. It wasn't very healthy, wasn't very nice there, but on the day, one day came, and Jerry started issuing a ration, which was a piece of bread and a tube of sort of cream cheese. We're on the move. So off we had to go, and we moved off back down towards Hania, and then eventually to Suda Bay. And at Suda Bay, we were on the quayside of Suda Bay and waiting to go aboard a boat, which would eventually take us over to Greece. And during that time, there were hundreds or thousands of troops, not many German soldiers. We were wandering around and looking for food. There was one or two Italians who had been prisoners of the British and had been released, and they were still around. And we saw them in a house there, and we tried to bargain. You know, what we had, very little to give them, for some bread. And the only thing they wanted was a gold ring, which I had. And I said, no way. So we didn't get any bread from the Italians. The Germans brought out some tins about so torn, about so square. And they gave a ration of biscuits to everybody from these tins. And I remember one small point at the end of the distribution of the biscuits. There were a couple of or three tins left on the concrete. And the last of the Germans guarding the biscuits disappeared. And of course, with the biscuit tins there and the Germans gone, there was one mad rush of chaps over to grab what biscuits were left in the tins. But we were not so lucky there. Well, eventually we got onto the small Italian, I think it was an Italian boat, and sailed off to towards Greece. Not much to report on that journey, I'm afraid. We found another box of raisins. Well, somebody did, and brought them out and shared them out. That made a little bit of helpful as far as the food situation was concerned. And then, of course, we found ourselves eventually an overnight trip. And next day, of course, we found ourselves entering Piraeus Harbour. A few ships been blitzed and sunk, and some of the bows sticking out of the water. And from there, we were put on two, was it coaches, I think? Yes, coaches. And we were taken to a spot in Athens where it looked to be like a large school building. And there the Greek Red Cross came, and the only thing they could offer us was about two cigarettes each, I think, something like that. We were there for two or three days. I can't remember exactly what. We mooched around the grounds. We, on the side, I always remember some ground where they had tipped their rubbish, and also there was burning embers of fire where a lot of ammunition was exploding, but the tip being close by, and looking around, I saw that there were some potato peelings or old potatoes, so I didn't have to tell you what happened to those. And we managed to cook them up in our Dixie at that point to reinforce the lack of food, shared with Jim, of course. How long we were there, I'm not sure, not long, I can assure you it was not very long. And then after that, we had to go back into Athens, that's right, we came back into Athens and we boarded trains. But not carriages, but trucks. And these trucks were solid trucks with just both ends had a window on opposite to the other. And the size of those windows were about so long, 18 inches, 2 feet. And about sort of so deep.
About a foot high.
Something like that, yeah. And you had to sort of stretch to look at the top, sort of the height of them. And we were stationary in Athens station there, with the platforms full of German soldiers and a few Greek civilians. But we weren't on the line close to the platform. We were on this line with no platform. And I remember this very well because there was a little old lady. She was coming up the platform and periodically she would stop. face the trucks, and she would open her Mac. Well, it was I didn't understand exactly what she was doing until she came close to us, and then almost opposite us, she stopped. And I was looking out at the time, and she opened her Mac, and on a piece of string, a piece of cardboard across her chest, Germany invaded Russia this morning. So that was the 22nd of June, that day. And that's how we knew. I memorized that we were in Athens on that day, the 22nd of June. And then she would close her Mac and just casually walk up the line of trucks. Don't know whether she ever got caught or not. We never knew. There was another person who courageously trying to throw loaves of bread through that small gap from a distance, I should say, from here to there, I should imagine, the width of two lines of railways. Some were fortunate to get through that gap, but of course all the loaves didn't hit the side and fell on the rail side. Well, anyway, from that point we moved off, and we eventually got to a place called now I'm not sure which comes first, Larissa or oh God. No, I had it just now. It was a point where we had to go across the mountains. It might come back. No.
Don't worry.
It's on the way to Salonika, of course. We knew it, but we didn't know at the time. We had to disembark from the train, because our engineers had blown the bridges and the trains couldn't pass any further than that point. So the Germans had arranged for some rickety old buses to take us over. And I know, waiting just before we were setting off, there was a crowd of us in this rickety old bus. When we were in the village, just about to leave, when a man and a woman rushed out of a shop. He had a white apron on, and he came up, and I don't know if ours was the first bus or not, I don't know, but he had bread, and he threw a loaf of bread into the bus, and the woman threw some cigarettes into the bus. And I think perhaps others had the same luck as we did, but we had two loaves, I think, into our bus. And I don't know whether I ought to say this. Can you wipe it off if necessary? And this old man, old man with his with a lady, threw these couple of loaves into the bus, and one of our corporals managed to catch one, and we didn't see any much of that a loaf of bread at all. By the time the other small loaf had been shared out, we were still unlucky to have none. However, on we went. Prior to these buses going over, we learned that prisoners who preceded us didn't have the luxury of being driven over the pass, Lamia Pass, and they had to walk over. Well, there was apparently one story went that a sailor off of the York, who was taken prisoner, he had bare feet, and he was walking with bare feet. And of course, you can imagine with the type of ground he was walking on, his feet were bleeding. And apparently, this story has been told to me by a New Zealander who was with him or in his vicinity. Of the Germans coming along in a truck, saw him and offered him a lift, and he refused a lift by the Germans. He refused to take it. Well,
why?
Because they were Germans. He refused a lift. He wouldn't take a lift from the German. So off we went to the next place when we got onto trains again. Larissa. I think I've already mentioned Larissa. Lamia. No, Lamia to Larissa. Or Larissa to Lamia. That was the break in the railway between those two towns or places. And then we boarded the trains again at either Lamia or Larissa. And then our journey then took us on to Salonika. Well, anybody who'd been to these barracks in Salonika will tell you what a horrible place that was. The atmosphere with the Germans and the Germans and the civilians in Salonika was totally different. In Athens, if we were close or marching through the towns in Athens, the civilians would be openly putting their thumbs up to say, good luck to you lads, good luck, hope you get on, or the message which you can read by signals. They would openly try to talk to us. But when we got to Salonika, things were totally different. It was a place of complete difference. The civilians wouldn't attempt to talk to you because we had a long march through Salonika, and we would sing typical songs. She's an old tiddly ship, and all marching songs that we do. And if we were singing them, some of the guards would come along and stop us. But as soon as he stopped us, then where he came from, back the line, they'd start up and annoy the Germans as much as we could. And the civilians, we knew that they were subdued terribly. And now, where they in Athens, they would openly put their thumbs up. In Salonika, this is the way they used to do it. They would scratch their cheek with their thumb and then rub their thumb up the side of their nose. It's the only and the nearest way they could do it. Salonika was not a very nice place at all. Now, during the first night, we weren't there only on one or two nights, but it was a terrible place to be. At least we had some sort of ration, just soup and a piece of bread, more water than anything more substantial. But in the evenings, there were people trying to escape, for instance, out and over the wire, and we heard shots, we heard screams where certain members of the Cypriot community.
Cypriots.
Were screams and torture going on. Shots. One morning we saw a body lying on top of the barbed wire on the edge of the fence, which was quite high, you know, where they shot him and left him there, and I think they left him there purposely to warn anybody else that they'd get the same if they tried. It was a terrible place, and we were very, very lucky to get away from it. And again, on to trucks. And this time, we were squeezed 60 in trucks, 60 in a truck, 50 to 60 in a truck. I think we counted somewhere in between 55 and 60 in ours. More or less like sardines in a truck. And there we had to move from Salonika to wherever our destination was, up through Yugoslavia. And it was a terrible journey. We stopped once or twice to... We didn't have much to relieve ourselves with, so they had no problem there. We stopped on one occasion and were allowed out for water on occasion. And...